Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
All right, let's do it.
Here's John Williams.
See if we can come up with a few today and a few tomorrow. Knock it out of the park this week. Everything the Cubs weren't yesterday. Wow, was that tough to bear.
Lord have mercy.
I mean, come on. It's 108 on WGN. This is John Williams. I'm in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. On the one and the two. And sure appreciate you tuning in this afternoon. Stay here all the way till 3 o'clock. That's when I get off the air. After 3 o'clock, keep listening. It gets even better. You can't find a better day to play baseball than Saturday and Sunday in Chicago. We were kind of looking forward to Sunday's game. We weren't there, but I live nearby now, and it's kind of fun to hear the crowd in the background and watch or listen to it. 10-0 at the end of the first half of the first inning. In fact, they were lucky they got out of there just 10-0 in the first inning. It's funny, though, isn't it? Because do you do this, you say, wow, the Cubs are down 10-0. At this rate, they'll lose 90-0. But it never goes at this rate. In fact, it's funny, 10-0, and then you play even with them. You might even play better than them for the next 8 innings. You know, it's like, wow, if you're going to be down 10-0 in one inning, then not only is this not your day, but you're going to continue. How do you get whooped for one inning, and then you don't get whooped for the rest of the game? But they got whooped for that one inning, and that's all you need. I like Joe Maddon after the games. It's funny because particularly after a tough loss, an embarrassing loss like that, a double-digit loss, and we've had some of those lately where we just give up a lot of runs. The Cubs are a consistent 500 club these days, and that's just so unsatisfying. But afterwards, the reporters always talk to Joe Maddon. And when it's a game like this, everybody uses their sort of sotto voice. And they're very careful about their words. And Maddon is not a jerk. Some managers, after a loss like that, they go, ah, you guys, blah, blah, blah. They bark back at the media. They bark at the sky. And you really don't see Maddon behave that way that much. I think he always takes the questions on their face value, tries to give a good answer. He's straight up about it, you know. And if it's good, it's, you know, if the Cubs win or if something great happens, then it's, you know, a jovial or a fun or a more pleasant experience. But when it's not, he doesn't make it worse. I just like his whole MO after the game. But the reporters will say, it's almost like they're asking about a death in the family or funeral arrangements. Joe, could you just talk a little bit about what happened there? Joe, could you just, you know, it's a lot like this. We'll kind of dance around it and see if you'll come to what killed him. You know, do we have any idea what the prognosis is? Do we have any treatment available? And then he goes ahead and answers the questions. Sunday night, we went to see that Big Stick. Have you seen Big Stick yet, Steve Bertrand? I said Big Stick.
The Big Stick.
Speak softly, carry a big stick.
Right.
I've got the Roosevelt Show on my mind, but The Big Stick. You haven't seen that yet.
I do want to see it, though. Is it good?
Yeah, it is. Griffin saw it for the second time with Brenda and with me, and he laughed his full head off the second time. Brenda laughed a lot, too. I'm not a big out loud laugher. I didn't find myself laughing a lot. Frankly, I thought the movie was going to be a little funnier than it was. Some of the humor is situational where people are just... Ray Romano is so... I think he steals the show, to be honest with you. The cast is really good. And it's, you know, the story about this stand-up comic. He meets a graduate student. They are falling in or out of love. And having trouble telling their parents and their families about it. There's a cultural clash, a big cultural clash. He's Pakistani, she's not. And then she falls into a coma, and the relationship with his parents, with her parents, then grows deeper. When she comes out of it, the movie finishes up. You know, it kind of has a happy ending because it's a true story. In fact, at the end, in the credits, they show you the actual wedding pictures of the two where they eventually got married. You see his actual bride, who's not in the movie, of course, but is portrayed by Zoe Kazan. Holly Hunter's in the movie. Ray Romano's in the movie. And Kumail, is it Nanjiani, who is in Silicon Valley, among other things?
I'm going to say yes.
You know, really, so then the Pakistani cast in this movie, people whose names I won't try and pronounce, who you and I don't know, they are terrific. I mean, his family, bunch of actors you and I don't know and actresses, are really good. And it's as much fun to watch them as it is him. He's not actually that funny in the show. In fact, part of the shtick of the show is, the movie is, that he's a stand-up comic who's trying to get his feet underneath him. He's sort of learning his way. So he's not hilarious in this movie. But Ray Romano is. Only because Ray is just so awkward and he's just so Ray-ish. It's very funny. On my scale of 1 to 23 Jujubes, I'm giving Big Stick, and I can and I'm just going to be calling
title,
it Big Stick.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just going to call it Big Stick and ask you to love me. I'm going to give it 18.5 on a scale of 1 to 23.
Not bad.
So there's that. Go ahead, Elif.
I'm excited because I love that guy. The main character, the writer.
Yeah.
I love him.
Camille?
Yeah, from Portlandia.
Oh, I've never watched that. You've never seen Silicon Valley. He's great in Silicon Valley.
And in Portlandia, what do you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So you should watch Portlandia, I should watch Silicon Valley.
I had a thoroughly Chicago experience happen to me today. Steve, as you may know, Brendan and I have moved recently into the Chicagoland area.
Wait, I did not know that.
And so figuring that the only way to make it easier would be to have a giant ping pong table moved through our 1,300 square foot condo, I had a ping pong table delivered today. The table and brackets weigh 200 pounds. And the delivery guy said, yeah, I'll be there. So you know how it is. You wait around, you wait around, you wait around. The guy finally shows up. And it's on the back of a truck. And the ping pong table and padding wasn't as big as I thought it was, but it was heavier than I thought it was going to be, 200 pounds. And he wheels it on his dolly right next to the building. And then he leans it up against the building. And we're on a walk-up. We're on the first floor walk-up, but it's like six steps around the common space through our condo, and then it's got to go out on this big deck we have in the back. That's why we have the ping pong table. It's an outdoor ping pong table, and it cost me what tuition at Southern Illinois University used to cost for a semester. So anyway, the ping pong table arrives, and he leans it up against the thing and says, sign here.
He just has to deliver it, my friend.
And I with pen in hand, I thought, don't sign it, John, don't sign it. You've made too many mistakes like this lately. And so before I signed it, I turned to him and I said, well, we're not done with the delivery yet, are we? Because it's just me, Brenda, Daisy, the Dizzy Dapple Dachshund, and Bingo, America's oldest hunchback wiener dog. That's my family. I thought even if we put sort of harnesses on the dogs and ran them up the stairs, it's not going to happen. So I said, are we done delivering here? And he says, yeah. And I thought, well, what kind of delivery service is this? I have a 200-pound ping pong table in front of my condo that's got to be in the back of the condo up six stairs.
So he only brings it, he doesn't even bring it inside.
No, he doesn't. I thought, well, how do you ping pong people think a person's going to get the table onto their deck? Light bulb. I said, well, would you help me? And I knew how this was going to go. Would you help me? Help me. Why am I even in this sentence? Would you help me put the ping pong table through the building and under the back porch? And he says, yeah, maybe you could take care of my lunch.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I went, oh, yeah, I know that's how these things go. Yeah. So, yes, was the correct answer. The other option was the dogs and Brenda go into a weight training program and we move it in 3 months.
So I'm sure you don't want to say who was delivering, but was it a ping pong company?
Well, it was a ping pong company that made, Steve, this is no ping pong.
I know, we've been through this.
It's an indoor-outdoor table tennis facility.
I know, you live near the lake in the Windy City, and you're going to play ping pong outside all summer long.
It's an indoor-outdoor table tennis facility.
Right. Mm-hmm. Take the bandana off your head or the headband. You're not playing now.
So what do you need to know?
So was this...
Oh, the company, yeah. Well, so they're in California, Steve. That's where the good tables are made.
So you had this table shipped from California?
Uh-huh.
You're just a wonderful man. And so
this, they hired a third-party contractor in the Chicago area to deliver the table.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't really have... See, I would think I might complain over that one.
If nothing else, back to the guy, who Kevin is his name, and he and I were in a ping-pong chat room, and that's how I met him in this company. And so maybe I ought to feed back to him and tell him, hey, just so you know.
So you met a guy named Kevin in a ping-pong chat room.
Right.
First of all, you were in a ping-pong chat room, and there's another guy, Kevin, there.
He's the president of the company that I bought the indoor-outdoor table tennis facility from.
Right, and your confidence in it actually being an outdoor table is high?
I haven't opened it up yet, but it's a 200-pound box.
I'm sure. Then
leaning against my condo.
Wouldn't throw you a curve there, or spin ball, or whatever they do in ping-pong.
And so the guy goes, maybe you take care of my lunch. And I said, oh, okay. I said, sure.
We've got sandwiches.
I know. I thought, Brenda, make a tuna. So I said, okay, I'll give you $20 if you walk this through my thing. He said, okay. And then we walked it through there for $20.
Now, so that's worth it.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's, you know what? I mean, I would have tipped him 10.
Well, it's worth
it. So it's really only larceny for double that.
It's worth it as long as you didn't already pay for it once.
Say that again, Steve?
Well, I'm assuming that you probably already paid for delivery to your deck when you ordered it.
Well, it came with delivery. Yeah, that was part of the cost.
Yeah, but they didn't say deliver to the neighborhood.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that, but I don't think the delivery guy was too interested in the fine print.
No, not when there was lunch to be had.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, and this is the truth, but I knew this sentence wouldn't help me. But this sentence came to me, gosh, it's awful early for lunch.
No, it wouldn't have helped.
Because it's like 10:45, 11 in the morning. I usually wait till, you know, quarter, noon, 12, sometimes 1 o'clock.
If we put a pot pie in now. So you haven't taken it out of the box yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
We're a little worried because it doesn't look like there's a whole ping pong table in there. That is, it's a relatively thin box.
I wouldn't look then.
And I'm like, well, where are the legs and the wheels and, for that matter, the paddles? It did not come with paddles.
That's how Kevin gets his dinner.
Oh, you want the brackets?
Right.
How about a midday snack? Susan wanted to help me out on this. Hey, Susan, this is John, and you're on WGN.
Hey, John, this is Susan. I learned the hard way, too, in living in a lovely walk-up building or whatever in the city. You have to specify white glove delivery.
What does that mean?
That means they'll charge you extra and bring it inside. If not, most of the time, they will just leave whatever it is you purchase at the door, on the curb.
Well, I could understand if it was UPS or whatever, and they're making a you know, more or less a mail delivery. But this was a specific package delivered off a truck, delivered. Do you see my point?
I understand entirely, and I was the victim of that, too. That's, we're being rational. They're
not. You know, it almost came to this, Susan. It was almost easier for Brenda and I to just live. I thought, okay, well, if the ping pong table's outside, maybe we'll just move out. We will now live on the curb. I'll put a table there. We'll wire some cable. We'll be good to go, you know?
Exactly. I had an armoire delivered on the curb and then had to rally around and find people to help. But yeah, it's
well, that's the funny thing, too. And so I'm as you may know, young and fit enough that I can help another guy deliver a 200-pound ping pong table. So he and I were able to do it. But I thought if this was Susan or if it was Brenda, if it was Elif, who's fit but not big and strong and tall. Elif's a petite young lady. What would have happened then? There would have been no delivery. They needed me. You know, in fact, he should be giving me about 14 of those dollars back.
And what's so sad in this day and age, you think, oh, I can fall back on the, I'm old, but I'm cute, and I'm personable, and you'll help me out. Doesn't work.
No, doesn't work for me. Susan, thanks for the call.
No,
white glove delivery.
Brenda.
All right, thanks
Bye.
For the call.
Bye
now. You know, so there's that. I thought, well, that's a thoroughly a buddy of mine. He's my old neighbor in LaGrange Park, but he knows the Chicago way, Jim Zwitt. And he was the kind of guy where when the city people would be coming down trimming the trees, he'd grab them and go, hey, tree trimming guy, you know, the municipality will do these sorts of services for you. They pick up the leaves and, you know, wash, sweep the street. But he'd grab and go, hey, what does it take to have you pull out this bush or something like that? I mean, he knew that language and he knew who to ask. And then they'd come over and go, ah, well, you know, how are you doing there? And then they'd talk a little bit and suddenly somebody would open up a wallet and a bush would be removed and everybody was happy about it. The guys made a little money on the side and my buddy got a bush removed or whatever it was that it was the sort of a extra service. That's just the way it goes. I don't know if that's unique to Chicago, but I think it is kind of a Chicago thing. Sort of like dibs on winter parking. I started to make a list, Steve, of things that are sort of, when you move to Chicago, you go, oh, that's the Chicago way. That's a uniquely Chicago experience in the wintertime, putting chairs out to save your parking spot.
Up until not too long ago, you used to have to get your garbage cans from the alderman.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
When you would move in, you'd contact your alderman's office to get garbage cans.
I thought if I were adding to the list of things that are uniquely Chicago that way, experiences that you have when you commit to the city, you could include things like getting goosebumps at the Blackhawks national anthem. You know, I mean, something that you do not get anywhere else, you do get in Chicago. You do get in that spot, in that city, at that time. It's a very, you know, Chicago-centric thing. But I don't know what else is on that list. My number is 312-981-7200. By the way, we'll talk about Donald Trump Jr.'s meeting with the Russians, maybe with the expectation of getting dirt on the Clintons, maybe not, but that's the direction that story is heading, and the legality of what may or may not have been transpiring there with a reporter from the New York Times. Also, we've been enjoying following the story of Martin Shkreli, the pharma bro, the pharmaceutical executive, one-time hedge fund manager, who made himself a lot of money and then raised the price of that drug 5,000% and lamented that he didn't raise it more. So how's that trial going? That's also coming up in this hour on WGN. Joe wanted to help me out here. What are your thoughts, Joe? You're on the air.
Hi, John.
Hey.
That guy took you.
Oh.
If they're delivering the mail, they leave it outside. He's delivering an item to you that is a large item, and they're delivering it to your home, not to your curb. That company in California pays that company here to deliver that product.
Yeah, now that you mention it.
And you should call that company and tell them that he did that to you.
I'm going to go back in that ping pong chat room and talk to Kevin.
Yeah, you don't really need to call. Just go back to the ping pong chat room.
Yeah, right. There you go. Well, I meant the company you actually bought it from.
Yeah, and that's Kevin, yeah. Well, that's a good point.
Anybody that, if they're trying to pull that, don't sign for anything.
I know.
Let them take it back, and then you can explain. They can explain to the company that sold it to you why you wouldn't sign for it.
Well, maybe what I should at least do. I mean, you know, the table's there, so I don't want to move the table now. But what somebody owes me at least the discount of the delivery charge, which was
exactly
part of the original bill. Plus, somebody paid for somebody's lunch.
Right. You should call that company you purchased that table from because they're making that company look bad by doing what they're doing.
Thanks for the call. Listen, I'm going to follow up. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate your thoughts on that.
Not in a million years.
What do you mean not in a million
years? When you look at that guy and say, hey, I paid for this. Put it on my back deck. You wouldn't do that.
Well.
No, you wouldn't do it. I don't think I would do it either. I'm not saying I would. But if the guy said, hey, Mac, This is what you paid
right
for?
Here's the deal.
Would you say, okay, take it back?
No, I'm not doing that.
I couldn't do that either.
We're that close. We are that close.
Right.
Literally, you know how I don't have cable or internet service in my house?
Yep.
I've talked about that ad nauseum, too.
Oh, no.
But literally, the cable delivery guy, the guy that's going to come and hook it into my box, he called me up the other day, and he goes, I'm ready to deliver. I'm coming to your house. And I went, ah! And then he said, this is your address? And I said, yep. And I said, and it's unit 1N. And he goes, oh, wait. It doesn't say 1N on here. That's a new order. And I go, no!
No!
No! He goes, yep, that's a new one. I go, no, don't do that. I've been waiting for weeks to get my cable hooked up. Please, 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 just come. And he goes, yeah, but it's not correct on this thing. And I go, I will be out front next to a ping pong table or a place where someday a ping pong table will be. Just please come and deliver just please hook up the box. The cable's right there. Just hook it up. He said, nope, I can't do it. And he didn't do it. So I'm still rolling internet free at my house. But I digress.
Do you feel more peaceful without all those interruptions?
You would, except now I'm doing a lot of things that people moving in are doing, like, you know, signing up for gas and, you know, ordering ping pong tables.
Oh, the
and
internet would be
like
very
that.
Helpful with that.
It's like they have no, if ever you would want internet, it's when you're just moving in or out of a property.
Well, if you can't do it online, just you can call people. They'll answer lickety-split.
I know. I thought, what's a phone number? What is a phone? Just real quick here. Jeff, you're a delivery guy. You're not the guy that I bought lunch for today, are you?
No, John, I'm not.
Okay.
But here's the deal. So when you're paying for delivery, you're paying door-to-door. In a commercial or, you know, a venue, it would be dock-to-dock. Every time there's an additional service, there's an additional charge. The fact that you're even a resident, so that residential delivery, there's an upcharge to that. Inside delivery, anytime you cross a threshold with that delivery, that's an additional charge as well. So your company that you bought, they're probably paying door-to-door. They might be paying residential delivery, but the company, the delivery company, is only required to bring that curbside to your home.
Well, I guess I'll be the cautionary tale then, Jeff. I mean, I never thought to ask that of any of the parties along the way. You know, like, I just assumed if it's a 200-pound item that they would put it where you want. It's like if it was a piano, they're going to leave the piano on the curb? No, you buy a piano because you want it in your living room.
But that's also an assumed, like the lady had said earlier, white glove service.
Wow.
Because they're going to bring that in, set it up, remove all the trash, the garbage.
Yeah.
Here.
Now Brenda's got to do that.
Good for her, I guess. But
she's not like she's watching cable.
We're free.
If you think about this, they may be sending this to a commercial spot where it's a dock-to-dock or door-to-door. And so there has to be that upcharge every time there's additional service. There's a liability when the delivery company brings that across your threshold. If he trips and he's got that, hurts himself, you know, that's something that you're going to be liable for as well. Mm. You see what I'm saying?
I do, Jeff. Listen, I'm out of time, but like I said, I'm the cautionary tale here. Everybody learn and live by me, but I appreciate your heads up, my friend.
You got it. Have a great day.
Hey, Jeff, thanks for listening, and thanks for the phone call.
Oh, thank you.
A text has just poured in. It's from my friend Roberta King, who listens to us in Peoria. She said, John, don't you have two young boys, men now, who could have helped you with the ping pong table? Roberta, first of all, it's not a ping pong table. It's an indoor-outdoor table tennis facility. Number two, my sons have been orphaned. They are no longer our children. They became orphans about the time I paid for the ping pong table. We'll follow the Donald Trump Jr. story that you alluded to in your news after the 2 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News. This is John Williams. We've been following the Martin Shkreli story here, too. The farmer bro, the young man who became an internet or a hedge fund sensation. He was actually, at the age of 17, an intern. He was an intern for Jim Cramer, you know, the Mad Money guy. This guy is he's a weird cat, but he is brilliant, and he's successful. He knows how to make money and persuade other people to give him theirs. But he's also a guy who just won't shut up. And his attorneys, we discovered a week or two ago, said, listen, you got to pipe down now. You've got to chill on social media. This isn't going to help you. And yet on June 29th, he posted on Facebook, quote, about 30 of 300 jurors didn't like me. Most people didn't want to spend 6 summer weeks in a courthouse. 10%? I'd say that's pretty good. Lying media corporate drones love to lie for their shareholders. Don't call yourselves journalists or dare disgrace the venerable writer. You are industrial automatons. Not exactly sure what he's talking about there, but in the latest edition of the Washington Post, the first sentence is this. Not much Martin Shkreli has done the past 2 weeks has helped him in a trial that could put him behind bars for 20 years. On 8 counts of securities and wire fraud. You know, they're not trying him for being a jerk or for even raising the price on that drug. It's something different entirely. But whatever it is, don't you think that would humble you, at least temporarily? Boy, not this guy. Renee Merle joins us now on WGN, business writer for the Washington Post. Renee, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio in Chicago. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
What's the latest? Where are we now, Renee?
We're starting week three of this trial. It's expected to be a six-week trial, and we're still hearing from people who invested with Shirelli, gave him hundreds of thousands of dollars, and say that at some point the money disappeared, and he was, you know, this is part of the prosecution making their case for Shirelli having basically lied to investors in two of his hedge funds and in a pharmaceutical company called Retrofin.
But the defense, and by the way, you're not pronouncing the K, so I won't either. It's Shirelli, huh?
Shirelli, yes.
But everybody
pronounces it differently, but yeah.
You and I will go that way, and I will use that thereafter. So, but the point is that the defense, if I'm not mistaken, is that since the investors didn't lose money, even if the scheme is corrupt, maybe no crime was committed, or at least maybe he gets off, huh?
That's certainly the way that they seem to be going. The defense hasn't started their side of the case yet. But every time that the prosecution puts up a witness, the witness goes on and says that Shirelli lied to me about this, that, you know, X, Y, and Z. And at the end, Shirelli's attorneys get up and say, but you actually made money. And in some cases, these investors made millions of dollars. And so they're hoping that at least one member of this Brooklyn jury is going to say, these guys really aren't victims. These are high rollers who knew the risks of investing in a hedge fund and ended up making out good in the end. So why should this guy go to jail?
Was this a Ponzi scheme he had set up?
Well, the prosecution calls it like a Ponzi-like scheme, not exactly, direct like what Bernie Madoff did, but something very similar. He started one hedge fund and incurred some significant, massive losses. And instead of telling his investors what happened, he started the next hedge fund, raised even more money. And then when things went bad there, he started putting the money he raised from investors into a pharmaceutical company. And when investors said, hey, we want our money back, he didn't have it to give them. So they, according to the prosecution at least, what he did instead was give them said money from Retrofin, the pharmaceutical company, and shares in that company. And that's how he made his investors whole. So it's not exactly a Ponzi scheme, but it's very, very similar.
Hmm. Did anybody lose money? Has the state put somebody on who said I'm broke, as happened many, many times in the Bernie Madoff case?
No, they put on one gentleman, a Texas investor, who invested in one of Shirelli's early hedge funds before the hedge fund. He started about three hedge funds. And one of his early hedge funds, they did put on somebody who lost money. This gentleman actually lost about $5 million. But he didn't seem that upset with Shirelli. He said that, you know, it wasn't a great experience, but this was like a multimillionaire. He knew the risks and he lost money. He was, you know, trying to bet that Shirelli could make money. He didn't. He moved on. But the majority of people that they've put on actually made money and made significant amount of money.
Hmm. I wonder if the jury, you know, maybe that's beside the point, right? That is, if you're committing a crime, maybe you're doing it well enough that you're coming out ahead and everybody else is too, but it's still a crime. That is a distinction worth noting. I wonder if the state will be able to make that case or if the jury will appreciate it.
Well, that's definitely what they're hoping. What they keep trying to elicit from their witnesses is that Shirelli lied. And you're not allowed to do that. If I'm an investor with you, I expect you to be transparent about what you're going to do with the money. You can't lie to me about your experience. You can't lie to me about where my money is. And so that's just one of the basics of securities law. So they're going to try to take the jury back to those basic facts. If Shirelli lied, then he's guilty. And the defense obviously is going to say, oh, he might not have gotten all the details correct, but he made the money, and that was the point.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, because if I lied to you and you lost money, you would say, hey, wait a minute, a crime was committed, and the crime isn't losing money. It's lying about the scheme. So whatever happens thereafter is beside the point.
Yes. All the defense needs is one person who says, why should I feel sorry for these multimillionaires who Shirelli made a whole lot of money for?
Yeah, right.
And I don't think, at least the defense so far, from what I observed, the defense isn't necessarily arguing legal facts, per se. They're more trying to appeal to your sense of fairness. Again, we still have 3 more weeks to go. Maybe they'll go more into details later. But so far, really what they've focused on is you're really rich and he made you richer. What are you complaining about?
Well, Renee, the story in your paper says, is this your story? They could put him behind bars for 20 years on 8 counts. Is that your story?
Yes, yes.
Well, why invest this much time, money, and energy on this guy? Is it because of what he did with that drug, or is it something else?
They would say that this has nothing to do with him raising the price of that drug. That's not illegal. Lots of companies do similar things. Not all of them are as colorful as Martin Shkreli. That's really what made him a big name, just that he, you know, most company executives, they might make a business decision to raise the price of a drug, and then you won't hear from them again. Shkreli is somebody who's very active on social media, got kicked off Twitter, just can't seem to help himself from smirking even when he's before Congress. So he's just a different personality. But, you know, both sides have acknowledged that there were talks of not a settlement, but that he would plead guilty to some charges. And it's unclear to me whether he would have done serious time under those plea agreements. But he decided to go to court anyway. And he has this attorney, Benjamin Brofman, who is just so well known in the New York Criminal Defense League. He's somebody who used to defend mobsters. He's defended P. Diddy. I mean, he's like a really, I call him a bulldog because he's just so relentless. And so he's decided to, you know, go for it with a jury.
By the way, Frank on line one has, I think, a very good point. You and I have been discussing that there does not seem to be a victim in this crime, but Frank has one in mind. Hey, Frank, you're on the air. Hi.
Well, hi, John. I'm glad you asked the question, and it was partially answered as to who the victims were, who lost money. Well, very few, if any, of the investors in previous hedge funds lost money, but this guy was desperate. He needed a way to 100%
Oh, he cut off. Here's what he told Elif. You know who lost money? The people who saw the price of those drugs go up. I mean, that money had to come from somewhere. So let's not pretend that this was just clever money management. There were victims, and it was the people who either didn't get the drug or had to, you know, sell their house to afford it.
But again, that's not a crime. Price gouging is, but that's not what he's being charged with in this case. He's being charged with securities fraud for lying to his investors. He's not being charged with raising the price of this drug that is used for AIDS victims, children with immune deficiencies. You know, it's an obscure, but, you know, a drug that's been around for 60 years and is, you know, something that a lot of people rely on. But again, he raised the price 5,000%. That's not a crime. I guess it's a debate for other people to have whether those people who had to pay more are a victim or not.
Yeah, right.
Shkreli would just say it's capitalism. If they're a victim of anything, he would say they're a victim of capitalism.
Well, you know what it does, and you're right. And the capitalist solution then, and I'm not, and I think a lot of us are advocates of this model, the capitalist solution then is not government intervention or put the guy in jail. It is somebody else come along with a better mousetrap at a better price. And other companies have emerged that do that very thing. So, you know, maybe they'll get the last laugh. But can you tell me, just as I let you go here, Renee, his company is publicly traded, is it not? And what's happened to the price of his stock since all of this went down?
Wow, that is a really interesting thing. Shkreli is still a millionaire. He has stock in a company called Retrofin that he started that's still worth $30 to $50 million. If he can get off, if he can find that one juror who doesn't think his investors are real victims, he could walk away with this and still be a millionaire.
Well, do you think he's going to be found guilty on these counts? How are people handicapping this?
I think it's too early to tell. I think we have to wait until the defense starts its side of the case. which might be in the next week or so. Then we'll kind of see if Shirelli's going to testify. That could be a pivotal moment. You know, a lot of people think that his mother might testify. If you can portray this guy as not some weirdo farmer bro, but just a regular guy from Brooklyn who worked his way up, is super smart, hardworking, did the best that he could, you know, that could change things. So we'll see. I think I'm waiting for the defense because I think that's going to be the turning point.
Well, then I'll call you again. Renee Merle, business reporter for The Washington Post. Renee, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you.
She writes for The Washington Post. If you don't already, today would be a good day to subscribe to a newspaper. It's 1:53 on WGN. John, speaking of ping pong tables, I told you the story at the beginning of the show about how I had a 200-pound ping pong table delivered to my property. But the guy didn't put it on the back deck, which Deck Tech is restoring. He just left it at the side of the house for Brenda, me, Daisy, and Bingo, the wiener dogs, to haul up. When I asked him, I said, well, will you help me put that on the back? He said, yeah, how about you take care of my lunch? And I did. Hey, John, I also had a delivery this morning of 500 bricks to add to my patio. I'm glad somebody else can relate.
Did they cross a threshold?
This guy was expected to unload the bricks by hand from a trailer. My 78-year-old father happened to be there, so without missing a beat, he helps unload. I jumped in too, rationalizing that I can count the experience as a workout on my Fitbit. Yeah, you can. We helped the guy to be nice, and because I didn't want to be a jerk in front of my dad. Yeah, that looks bad if your 78-year-old dad is unloading 5,000 bricks and you're sitting there going, I didn't pay to be the service guy. Finally, he didn't offer to charge us less, and I didn't ask.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Yeah, right.
Here's John Williams.
It's 2:09. We're in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. Hi, it's John Williams. I really appreciate you tuning in, texting and calling as you do. The number's always 312-981-7200. Call or text that very same number. And we'll try and include you in the conversation. We'll either read your text or we'll put you on the air. You know, if who's going to go to jail first was a horse race, and the horses were Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, or Donald Trump Jr., I'd say right now the call would be, on the outside, it's Jr. making a move. I mean, this story is weird. The ever-changing Russia stories of the two Donald Trumps was the headline in CNN. New York Times and Washington Post have stories about the pageant, the beauty pageant, which may have actually been the sort of genesis of all of this. But boy, is it unfolding in the strangest ways. Am I here to understand that maybe before Donald Trump became president, the Russians said, hey, we've got some dirt on Hillary Clinton, and that was the meeting that Donald Jr. and maybe Jared and maybe Bannon were at?
No, not Bannon. Jared Kushner was there and Paul Manafort was
there. Manafort, yeah, right. Funny how I confuse some of those names. It's 2:11. Adam Liptak is a legal reporter for the New York Times, and he'll help us sort some of this out. Hey, Adam, it's John. You're on WGN in Chicago. Thanks for giving us some of your time.
You bet.
Strange story. Can you just kind of give me maybe the framework of how we can best understand this?
Yeah, it sort of changes by the day, but this is the first confirmed meeting, private meeting between a Russian national and the members of Donald Trump's inner circle you mentioned, including his son-in-law and his son. And day by day, Donald Trump Jr.'s story has changed so that now he's admitted that he went to that meeting in the hope of getting compromising information about Hillary Clinton. And to do that from a foreign national, much less a foreign national linked to the Kremlin, is a pretty big step, and it sure seems to undermine the president's statement, categorical statement, that there's been no collusion of any kind.
That's the New York Times reporting. Has Donald Trump Jr. or anybody in the administration confirmed that that was Donald Trump Jr.'s reason for going to that meeting?
Yeah, that was his statement, and he actually was a little pissed that he didn't, by his account, he didn't get the information he was looking for. In his statement, Donald Jr. says, "It became clear to me that that something else was the true agenda all along, lobbying about a law that we can talk about later. And the claims of potentially helpful information were a pretext for the meeting. That is, he took the meeting in the hopes that he'd get damaging information, and he came to be dissatisfied with the meeting because he didn't get that."
What's troubling, that he took the meeting at all? I mean, is that the first breach?
On the one hand, I don't think it's unusual for campaigns to seek damaging information about other campaigns. On the other hand, it may be a bright line not to cross when foreign nationals are involved. Federal election laws prohibit soliciting anything of value from a foreign national, prohibits foreign nationals from participating in political campaigns in any way. So the foreign piece of it is not good. And then, moreover, the fact that this foreign national is linked to the Kremlin may be an additional alarm bell.
Maybe that's what happens when you get rookies in there, people who either don't know the law, the history, the ethic, or the political damage that they may be, you know, causing. I mean, to be honest with you, I actually wondered in reading your articles today or the coverage in the Times, I thought, I wonder if the Clinton campaign had a similar opportunity, would they turn it down? If somebody said, hey, we've got damaging information about the Trump campaign, not that you had to work too hard about it. I mean, Lord, it was an amazing campaign. But suppose they had something that they felt was really significant. Would the Clinton team say, no, we don't like the source on this. We can't take that meeting?
It's an excellent question. It's a hypothetical. It's hard to know. But let me try this out on you. When in 2000, Al Gore's campaign over the transom got confidential briefing books on debate briefings for George W. Bush, their impulse was not to use it but to call the FBI, which is what they did, and turned it over to the FBI. So it's not true that every campaign will go to any lengths to get opposition research or damaging information or inside information about the opposing campaign. It is possible sometimes to think that's not the way we want to play the game.
So they take this meeting, though, with this Russian woman, the attorney, and these mm-hmm. people, and there's not much information there. They're more interested in changing this one law. It has to do with adoption, et cetera. They don't want to be real involved in that. So it's kind of a wash, as you said, in fake pretense.
Right. Although even her real agenda, which is to try to do away with a congressionally enacted law to address human rights abuses in Russia, is, you know, very much an opportunity to hear out someone with links to the Kremlin about something the Kremlin cares deeply about. And, you know, there you can ask the question about whether that's how a presidential campaign ought to be spending its time.
No kidding. Is there a law that's been broken here or potentially broken?
It depends how broadly you want to define the term a thing of value. If in offering damaging information to the campaign, the Russian lawyer was offering a thing of value, she may well have violated the law. And if Donald Jr. or others affiliated with the Trump campaign were soliciting a thing of value and damaging information was thought to be a thing of value, you know, more typically money. But nonetheless, if indeed she had something or they thought she had something and they were trying to get it, it's not outside the realm of possibility. And some liberal organizations have already filed complaints with the Department of Justice and the Federal Election Commission, saying that if that our reporting suggests that law might have been violated.
Can you give me some perspective on this? How big of a deal is this?
I think this is a moving target, and just as at first we thought there was nothing to the notion that the president himself might have obstructed justice, and now many legal experts think that the beginnings of a case can be made there. I think the special prosecutor in this case, too, and on the collusion side, may start to see this coming into focus, coming into the zone. It's, you know, this is the kind of thing where the reporting is changing day by day. I should say that the reporting was by my colleagues, Joe Becker, Matt Apuzzo, and Adam Goldman, doing terrific work. And just over the weekend, this thing has come into focus, and I would not be surprised if in the coming weeks we learn a lot more.
That collusion, though, would be with his son, not the president himself, right, or the candidate?
True enough, or his campaign, yes. So this is.
I'm wondering who you impeach or throw in jail. I mean, I wonder who gets stung with the crime here, right?
Yeah, no. It may be that at the end of this, we have 4 or 8 years of Donald Trump as president, even while some of the people closest to him face real legal jeopardy. That's true. On the obstruction of justice side, you know, there are serious arguments to be made that if Comey's account is to be believed, that asking to shut down an investigation and firing your FBI director when he doesn't might be obstruction of justice or the kind of thing that Congress might care about in impeachment proceedings.
Well, Adam, to answer my own question, when I was thinking about this today, I thought, well, Richard Nixon didn't actually break into the Watergate Hotel. The question may be, what did the president know and when did he know it? So if his son took that meeting or his son-in-law takes that meeting at his either behest or with his latter knowledge for the purposes that you described, maybe he's guilty of a crime himself, if nothing else, lying to the people.
Conceivably. Now, his lawyer promptly put out a statement distancing the president from his son, saying the president didn't know about the meeting, didn't attend the meeting. It's a little hard to put too much distance between someone who bears your name and you, but there was the sense that it may be that Donald Jr. might be getting thrown under the bus.
By the way, the president has tweeted a number of things, you know, oftentimes trying to distract us about his meeting with Vladimir Putin. And the optics and timing of his meeting sometimes are just staggering. But he tweeted on Sunday at 7:50 a.m., Putin and I discussed forming an impenetrable cybersecurity unit. That wasn't you laughing, was it? An impenetrable cybersecurity unit so that election hacking and many other negative things will be guarded. The fact that President Putin and I discussed a cybersecurity unit, he later tweeted, doesn't mean I think it can happen. It can't. But ceasefire can and did. Do you have any reaction or background or thoughts for us on
that? I don't have any background. This sort of stream of consciousness through Twitter from the leader of the free world is we're living in an entirely new era here. And it's hard to know just what to make of it.
Any last observations you have for me, questions I should have asked just now, Adam?
No, I think you covered it quite well. And I think you're right to think that it may be that a window is opening onto something very, very interesting.
In the direction of his son or in the direction of the president's knowledge of those other people working on his behalf?
Linking this particular incident up to the president, that line is at best a dotted line at the moment. But these are people who are very close to him, a blood relative, a son-in-law, and the chairman of his campaign. So these are not peripheral figures.
Adam Liptak writes from the New York Times. He's their legal reporter. We'll visit again. My best to the staff over there. Nice job, Adam. Thanks for joining us.
So much. Yep.
Yep, there he goes.
Just want to ask them how it's going to end, right? That's the question you want to ask.
Well, and, you know, no kidding, Steve, and when. But it's also amazing, isn't it, how many new chapters get written? I mean, you didn't see this one coming, did you? You thought, oh, this book could end any time now. Nope, they're just getting started. The they being, I don't know, whoever's pulling the strings in the universe.
Well, the interesting thing, and I wasn't listening to all of it, I'm sorry, but the corroboration for a lot of this is coming from within the Trump administration.
Yeah.
Did he address that at all?
Well, I said this is the New York Times reporting, but he said, well, his son himself said that he was frustrated that there was no useful information for us.
Oh, yeah, no, but they corroborated as far as it, you know, when they kind of forced Junior to cop to what happened here, because people within the administration were saying, well, it wasn't just about adoption or things like that.
Yeah. We didn't talk at any great length about that. You know, I'm believing the reporting that I'm reading, and it seems to be sort of validated by the president's son's own words. It goes back and forth.
Well, right, and let's keep in mind how this worked. I mean, they did this story on Saturday, and Donald Trump Jr. said this was about orphans. And then they did more reporting and learned that it wasn't initially about orphans at all. It was about the promise of dirt on Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. And then once they came forward with that, Donald Trump Jr. changed the story and said, you know, it started with the promise of information, and then it became about orphans.
Well, and the orphans thing is kind of funny. I mean, when you first heard about that, maybe you had the same reaction I did, and I thought, They didn't sit and talk about orphans. Are you kidding me? Because what, puppy dogs weren't available? This is not the sort of conversation that the Trump team and Vladimir Putin's people want to have a conversation about. Oh, no, yes, they do. And here's why. Because Putin cut off the adoption program in Russia to the United States. Why? Because he wants a law changed in the United States. And it's one that punishes human rights violators. And one of the human rights violators in Russia is a man that Putin jailed and died in jail. So he's not happy about how we're reacting to that. So he holds up Russian-American adoptions, and therefore the conversation becomes, or I hope you're following this at home because I barely am, the conversation becomes about Russian adoptions. That's not what it was about. I mean, yeah, it was, but that's the tail wagging the dog.
Right. So it started with Putin in jail, the guy. The U.S. came up with a law. I want to say Manzarek. That's not right, but the law refers to his name.
Yeah.
Putin responded by cutting off U.S. adoptions.
Exactly. So the last thing that would have been accomplished then would have been an easing of U.S.-Russian adoptions if all of these other things happened. That is, do you have any dirt on Hillary Clinton? Can you get that law changed that is jailing Russians who close to the Kremlin and maybe are human rights violators? That was the agenda for this female attorney that was visiting with them. And when they realized that there was no real dirt there, suddenly Trump's people lost interest. I don't know where the crime is in all of that, but these are the players on the field. Yeah. This texter says from the 630 area code, OMG, you guys are always searching for poop on Trump. LOL, give it up. I think that in defense of covering this topic with the reporter from the New York Times and talking about it on the radio, and reading the Wall Street Journal today and watching Fox News and reading the Chicago Tribune, New York Times, listening to WGN Radio. Anyway, in defense of following what's called the news, you may not like that or the way the media is handling it, but there it is. And my observation about a lot of this is that a lot of it is being driven by the president's actions and words. Literally, if he would tweet less or be more consistent in his messaging, we wouldn't all be left scratching our heads wondering, well, what does that mean? When Kellyanne Conway, Donald Trump Jr., and Donald Trump all say three different versions of the same thing, when Rex Tillerson says one thing about North Korea and the president says another, then you've got to try and figure out what our policy is and what's happening. Literally, what's happening here? And when the president tweets, and that is his preferred means of communicating with you, then you and I have to figure it out. And sometimes it's consequential and sometimes it's trivial. But it's all the president talking to you. And those of us that are, quote unquote, covering it are left to just try and figure it out. For instance, I'm looking at one of his most recent tweets. I cannot imagine that Congress would dare to leave Washington without a beautiful new health care bill fully approved and ready to go. There, he's prodding the Senate to hurry up and get that health care bill.
Wasn't there one about if Chelsea Clinton had sat in for her mother at the G20 summit?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, you want me to read that one to you? If Chelsea Clinton were asked to hold the seat for her mother, as her mother gave our country away, the president said, well, the fake news would say Chelsea for prez. And then after that, he tweeted, let's see, this is a Sean Hannity retweet, and then a Fox and Friends retweet, and then a Fox News retweet. He's been retweeting a lot of his advocates on Fox, but yeah, he's very caught up in that. I thought that was very weird.
And then it was very unusual.
I don't know how those things go, but usually when they're all at the big table, I guess maybe you've got to go up and have a sidebar, or somebody comes up and whispers in your ear, Mr. President, they don't have the turkey and salami on rye. And then you've got to go and deal with that.
You know, so the story was that there at the G20 summit, all the world leaders are sitting around these tables. And for a time, our president wasn't there, and Ivanka Trump was in his place.
Right.
So when I saw that at first, I thought, well, this all makes sense. The meeting with Putin went way long.
Right.
They sent Melania in because it was time.
Come on, get out. They're waiting for you in the other room.
Right. And so then Ivanka took the seat. But it was, I guess, during a meeting with Prime Minister Abe in Japan.
Right.
But anyway, the president said it was standard or something, and it's not, it's
Well, I could
see. Very unusual.
If here's what I think. If the president is there, and I don't know, it's the 20 world leaders, and they're all doing stuff, and maybe they're having sidebar meetings or other issues their teams are working on, and so you've got to go up and talk to Abe or Abe's people, that's sure. Fine. Your second, I think, would stand in then. It would be the UN ambassador or the vice president.
Secretary of State.
Secretary
was
of State
there.
Would
Gary
be perfect.
Cohen was
right, right,
there.
Right. So I have no trouble with Trump leaving the table.
No.
Frankly, more probably gets done when he gets up. But the fact that his daughter sits in, and she is, you know, brighter than most of us, and, you know, she's learning on the job. But you would just think that we would have a better second, a more qualified second. That's all that is. That's all that is. I mean, if nothing else, it is that. It's the president's ongoing way to just sort of thumb his nose at people like you or me who get upset about that sort of thing. You literally get the feeling that they do it just to push a button. John Williams here. We started the story, me talking a little bit about the delivery of a ping pong table and that the delivery man didn't want to bring it into our house. He simply said, my job is to bring the ping pong table here. But if you want me to deliver the table to your deck, that'll cost you lunch. So I tipped him and he helped me haul the 200-pound table through the house. We've been hearing delivery stories ever since. Hey, John, that happened to me. And this is from Pastor Dan in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Thank you, Dan. John, I ordered a commercial fridge for the church. The truck driver didn't even want to take it out of the truck. He said he was only contracted to drive the truck, not unload or load said truck. I finally convinced him to lower it down on the power lift. What did he think? The refrigerator was going to jump off? You see this scene, right? Pastor standing there. The truck is on the back of the fridge is on the back of the truck. And he says, my job is to bring it here. You have to get it off. He said, I convinced him to lower it down on the power lift. I then took the box apart. I attached the wheels and I managed to wheel it into the building. Enjoy listening. Signed, Grand Rapids, Michigan. So I guess this is a thing. Just once again, your cautionary tale for a whole host of things. But if in life something is being delivered to you, you need to make sure what that means. Because it may mean we'll get it to the door, but we won't put it in. It may mean we'll put it in, but we won't install it. What does that mean? I am now discovering it means many things. There's a really good story in the Sunday sports section of the New York Times. I don't want to go into it a lot here, but I just wanted to mention it because it was really well written. It's Michael Powell in Sport of the Times. And it's the story and part of the sort of continuing Olympic coverage they have of the U.S. women's Olympic high jumper, Shante Lowes. You probably don't know her, but she's represented the United States as a high jumper in four Olympics, and she's never medaled. But she's been a really good athlete her whole life. Good enough to represent the United States, and I believe she is the U.S. women's national high jump record holder, but when she's represented us in the Olympic Games, she's never medaled. And the story goes on to talk a little bit about her life as a child. She grew up in California. Her father's in jail. He's an addict. Her mother's unable to care for her and her siblings. She comes home from school one day. The house is empty. They say, what happened? They said, she says, what happened? And somebody tells her they came and foreclosed on the house, and so you guys have moved. She spent a lot of time living with her mom in cheap motels. She spent time living with her mom in the back of a car. Eventually, her mother farmed her off to an aunt. One day, she just came home, and it was when she was a freshman in high school, or I'm not exactly sure how they got to this point, but the point was that she decided, Shante did, that she would live with her grandmother because she needed a little stability in her life. So her grandmother takes care of her, and she goes to high school. She comes up to the track coach and says, I want to be on the track team. I think I could be a good high jumper. He said, well, you'll have to beat the juniors and seniors. She said, okay, I'll try. And every morning before school, she would practice. It's a habit that she has to this day. This little girl who had nobody rooting for or helping her in any way would go to school beforehand and practice high jumping. She became a great track athlete in high school. And she had a career at Georgia Tech as a result. She was a 4.0 student at Georgia Tech, and obviously a great track athlete there. And four times represented the United States. In the 2008 games, she finished in sixth place in the high jump. And the nice part about this story is, and the reason the New York Times is in part writing about it on Sunday's edition, is because she got a call in November. And I did not know that this still happens or that the distance between it and this can be so long. We're talking about the 2008 Olympics here. And in November of 2016, she starts to get phone calls and text messages from friends saying, congratulations on your bronze medal in the 2008 games. And she says, yeah, right, ha ha. And they say, no, they keep the blood samples from the athletes. And as the testing means gets more sophisticated over time, they're better able to test. And two Russians and a Romanian in front of her have been disqualified for doping. You've gone from sixth to fifth to fourth to third. You are now the 2008 bronze medalist in the 2008 games. And she did a dance of joy right there in her kitchen. All that time was lost. She didn't get to stand on the medal. She didn't see the flag raised. She didn't get to introduce herself to or carry that knowledge with her. And it bothered her all those years because she felt that she was a bit of a failure. Imagine that. But she never medaled. And now she has.
That is so cool.
Isn't that amazing?
Good for her. I'm sad that she couldn't relish in the joy of it that day, but it's still very, very important. It's just the backstory, her backstory.
I know. Boy, if you want to root for somebody, you want to root for her. And now she has her moment. Somebody should do a ceremony for her. They should just say, now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the bronze medalist for the 2008 U.S. da-da-da-da-da. Play the national anthem. Let her step up on a kitchen stool and receive. And by the way, she doesn't have her medal yet because I don't think they issue. And Kevin, you may know more about this than I do because I don't know anything about this sort of thing. But I think what they do in instances like this is they got to get the original bronze medal.
That sounds right. I don't know much about the story, but I think you should have her on your show, John, and have a little celebration.
You know what? Why am I telling the story?
Why don't
we reach out to Shantae? Well, are you... Elle, if you're a... This
I'm a producer.
You're the sports guy. I've got a producer right here.
So they have to go get the Romanian bronze medal?
Yes.
I'll find her.
Awkward. Awkward. Because they don't want to give it up. But you think that for all those years, you go, boy, if it's 2016, you're getting ready to carve the turkey or whatever it is you do in Romania or Russia, you'd think you got away with it. But no, you didn't.
Yeah, it seems like every few weeks we see another report about a former Russian athlete getting stripped of a medal because, as you said, they continue to retest the blood samples. And there's been, I think, thousands of Russian athletes that have tested positive for
You're absolutely right. I'm looking PEDs. For the thing here. It's funny because it says it's stunning. We don't follow it that much. Here it is. The disqualifications from past Olympics now run into the many dozens. In November alone, last year, the International Olympic Committee stripped 10 medals from athletes found to have cheated in those 2008 games. This is just one story. That month, 10 or 11 people, which is just a really tough phone call.
Hello, Svetlana. This is Bob over at the IOC.
We ran those blood samples again.
You know that pee in the cup thing? We've still got it downtown.
It's a state-sponsored thing.
Yeah.
The Russian government was involved with all of that.
Yeah. So I don't know if, you know, and then that poor woman, maybe she was a full-blown cheater and doesn't deserve our sympathy, but sometimes they were the sort of, you know, part of the program. That's what we do here.
Right.
And so would they have won without that? Maybe not.
Russia has actually had athletes from the Special Olympics.
Oh, no.
I'm serious.
Oh, no.
And that's all state-sponsored stuff.
Cheating?
In the Special Olympics, Russia was cheating.
You see a bunch of people with one limb, you know, one arm, one leg, and somebody's got two arms, two legs. Wait a minute. That's no. He grew one back.
I mean, come on. It's the Special Olympics.
Give me a break.
You're having your athletes cheat in these Special Olympics.
You know what? Then you're going to hell. If you do that.
Pretty much.
If you said, how can I go to hell someday? I know. I'll cheat in the Special. Then you are on a beeline to hell, boy.
Takes the spirit out of it. Takes the integrity out of it. The Special Olympics. It's unbelievable.
And boy, it's funny too, because I guess the way we know that is they must test them as well, which is really kind of low. You're coming up to a Special Olympian and saying, hey, listen, I don't want to do this any more than you do, but I'm going to need some urine and some blood just in case you're doping. You dopes. John, not only do they get the original bronze medal, this text has just poured in, but she will need to pay the taxes on the medal. Not exactly sure, but silver and gold, you definitely have to pay taxes. I'm friends with somebody who won a gold medal during the Worlds in curling, and she has to pay taxes on a gold medal. That's too bad because you can't exactly parlay a gold curling medal into a career. You know what I mean? You're not opening malls or on the cover of a biography about you curling. You know, how do you make money on that? If you're a track athlete, if you're Michael Phelps, you can live off of that. But curling, maybe not. And now you're down the taxes. I thought that our government paid the fees. Why am I thinking out loud here, Kevin? Doesn't the United States Olympic Committee, I know we pay for, and this didn't say, was this Olympic? Gold medal during the Worlds. Maybe that's different than the Olympics. But I believe that our bronze, silver, and gold medalists get a cash stipend from the United States, maybe for that purpose. They give them cash.
They do. I don't know the exact number, but the medalists absolutely do get payouts.
It surprised me when I heard that, because I thought even that violates. I mean, I know we got professional basketball players in the Olympics now. It's sort of not amateur sports anymore anyway. But that's kind of weird that we would pay our athletes, but I think we do. It's 2:51. Hey, Kim, while you got your microphone on there, mm-hmm. I was thinking about just throwing this out there.
Yep.
312-981-7200. Kevin, I want you to turn off your microphone and call in. No.
Perfect.
How will the Cubs do in the second half? How do you think the Cubs will do in the second half?
Are we talking about this now or after the break? Are we taking a break?
I am. I'll take your answer after this. And you may join Kevin.
I've got thoughts, John.
Okay. And by the way, you don't have a microphone, but you have a telephone. You can call too. 312-981-7200. Kevin, before I go to you.
Yes.
Ron just wanted to jump in here about your comment that the Paralympics or Special Olympians are tested. Tested evidently because they caught him cheating,
yeah.
Right?
Well, they were actually banned from the 2016 Rio Games, the Paralympics,
no.
Because of
there
was a vote to ban them completely. They had 10 athletes set to participate, and they were the entire Russian club was voted to be banned by the out of the Paralympic Games. Yes.
Well, I guess.
To clarify, Paralympic, not the Special Olympics.
Yeah, those are completely different things, but either way. Good grief. Are you kidding me?
It's pretty wild and sad.
Hey, Ron, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Yeah, hi, John. I'm glad to hear you're back on the radio, refreshing voice.
Thank you, sir.
I'm glad also you're not Trump beater up like all the rest of the guys.
Well, I beat him up some, but not. I try and be fair about it. Let's say that.
Not as much as everybody else. But anyways, we give the guy a break.
Okay.
But anyways, going back on this cheating bit, anytime you try to cheat your fellow human being, it's no good, whether it's Special Olympics or athletics or a test, whatever. You ought to go to hell just for that anyway.
Yeah. I don't know.
You want to be treated in life equally, you know, so why try to disadvantage somebody else?
Especially somebody who's, playing behind the eight ball a little bit to begin with. I mean, that's just insane.
Exactly.
That's insane.
You know, someone who's tried to hide all their life like this woman did, and all of a sudden just for somebody to come up with cheating just to beat her out of her, you know, her goal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Well, I appreciate you listening and calling and being reasonable about all of this. Ron, that's nice of you to say. I appreciate you're joining us here. Shante Lewis. All right, so Elif, let's see if tomorrow or sometime this week Shante wants to say hi. She's got a husband. She's got a few kids. And life has not been rosy for her, by the way. But she's had success, and hopefully she'll have even more. So maybe she'll say hi to us. Now Kevin's going to say hi to us.
Hey there.
So The 500 Cubs, actually they're not even 500.
Two games under 500, 5.5 games back of the Brewers. And, you know, I thought they would be fine. I really did, Jonathan. You know, they'll kick it into high gear eventually. And then yesterday, not so much the lopsided loss, but just sort of none of the comments in postgame really stood out. Just that they were talking about how they were relieved the break was here and that they needed to get away and things like that. I go, well, what do you have to get away from? I mean, how bad is this season really for all of you guys? Is there anything else going on with the players or with this team? What's the mood like in the clubhouse where you guys really need to get away from what? You're the defending World Series champions. I haven't seen them that down, this Joe Maddon core, this Joe Maddon group.
Yeah, right.
I haven't seen them this down and upset and kicking the dirt and over the past few years as I did yesterday.
These are the same athletes that were 25-8 right. to start the season last year, something right. like that. It was insane.
But I will say this, because they're going to make a trade. The trade deadline's August 1st. That's all great and well, and that'll help the team. But if they're going to go back to the postseason, if they're going to win the division, if they're going to compete for a World Series, it's going to be because of the players that did it last year. I mean, it's the same core. It's the Anthony Rizzo, the Chris Bryant, Sean Lester, Jake Arrieta. They need to play well. A trade it's going to help. They'll get a pitcher. But if they're going to go back and win anything, it's because the guys that won them a championship last year, and they all need to play better.
Feels like we're more than one trade away anyway. If we're going to do this, those guys have got to step up. Come on. Rokan joins us with Anna DeVlantis in the studio now. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Well, hello, John.
Hello to you.
Just commenting that your producer, I said, wow, you got a haircut. He said, no, I'm not wearing a ball cap.
It's weird to see him that way, isn't it?
Isn't that funny? I thought,
some people,
wow.
They just like Bill Leff. Without a ball cap, you wouldn't recognize him.
I have not seen Bill Leff ever without a baseball hat on.
Really?
Indoors, outdoors, church, funerals, everything.
When we were partners, we would sometimes do these stage shows, and he had to play Warren Harding. And the
fine, thank you.
And you're welcome.
I deserve that.
And he would not wear a hat. And we were like, for a minute, the guy would walk in, you know, and you're like, wait, who's that?
Who is that?
Oh, that's Bill.
It's embarrassing because you don't recognize them for a second, and you go, oh, I'm sorry. You're missing something.
Something.
I think he wants the Bazooka Joe thing. I mean, that's kind of his.
It suits him for
it does.
Sure.
It does. Bazooka Joe-ish.
Yeah. And he wears the hat, just a little, you know, the baseball hat, just a little askance. And it's a branding thing, and it's working great for him. And he looks great, hair or hat.
That's funny because Bill Leff is the least pretentious person you'll ever meet in broadcasting.
Totally.
For sure.
But I think you're right. It's his brand.
Yes.
It's his thing.
However.
But unrecognizable without the hat. Like Kenny Chesney without the hat. Does anyone know what he looks like?
Right.
No one does.
That's true.
No one does.
That's true.
So you kids are ready to roll. Give me your headline.
Okay, well, let's see. Oh, we got Congressman Kinzinger is going to be here on Russia, North Korea, Syria, and Donald Trump Jr., or DJ, as I'm going to call him. This is going to be easier. Maybe they call him DJ. I don't know.
I've never heard that, yeah.
I'm watching some people bend over backwards to try to explain. It's funny how the Trump folk will say things that they, and it's not about politically road testing them. It's they will say things like, well, that's just the way it is. And then people go, whoa, but that's not how this works. You can tell it's a small company. You know, the Trump organization was, you know, 30 executives or something, mm-hmm. right? Not hundreds of them. And so they got to, you know, say whatever it was, and we're just going to do it. But they're running 300 million people here. This isn't going to really work.
You're talking about having a meeting with the Russians saying, hey, listen, if you got some dirt on Hillary, we'd really appreciate that.
Yes.
We'll be happy to go along with us.
Yeah.
Kind of
that doesn't right.
Okay, but let me ask you guys this. I asked the New York Times reporter about this today. If the Clinton people had the same offer, do you think they would have taken it?
From the Russian government? I don't know the answer to that. And if they did, it would be wrong.
I guess that's
the right
answer.
This would be wrong.
No matter who it is, it's wrong. But I mean, it's very tempting, isn't it? We're all looking at like, oh my God, but you go, wait a minute. The Russians go, hey, we've got some poop on Hillary Clinton here. Do you want to take the meeting? I mean, are you kidding me? In this day and age, I'll bet more than half of the politicians take the meeting.
The dirty games of politics.
But I think they don't take the meeting. I don't think the son should take the meeting.
Right. Senior didn't, but maybe even Junior shouldn't. I don't know who's far enough down the tree that we could cut him off if it goes bad.
Yeah,
but I don't know him.
Listen, and I'm not trying to.
Who?
Listen,
who?
Politics is not a game played in short pants, as Harold Washington said. And so this is not, and I get it. I totally understand that this is the sort of thing that happens. But Donald Trump could solve this whole thing by being tough on Russia. Not coming back from his meeting with Putin going, guess what? We're going to do a plan together where we're going to keep all of the cybersecurity together. My new best friend. If he just treated them the traditional way that the United States has been treating them basically since 1945.
Arms distance.
Yeah, arm's length. And like, and if you mess with us, we'll mess with you. And, you know, we don't want a full Cold War. We don't want an arms race. We don't want any of those sorts of things. And we do want some cooperation. Like in a James Bond movie. Remember in a James Bond movie, every once in a while, the Americans and Russians have to get together with something because there was some other guy worse.
Yeah.
Right? But
it always felt icky.
But it felt weird. Mm-hmm. Don't. But always, you know, with spies with each other. don't get too close. And why? Why all the love all the time? I don't get it.
All right.
Thank you.
Do the news.
You started me.
Sorry.
You know what he does?
You wind him up, and then everyone else has to deal with it.
All I said was, what are you guys going to talk about? I said, give
me your... Seemed harmless, John, but you know what you're stepping into when you ask that.
My bad.